Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, your life connection to the information for a healthy body, an enlightened mind, and a renewed spirit.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to We Get Results. It's Tuesday, November 22nd, 2016, and I'm your host, Mary Singer Albertson. If you haven't joined me before, We Get Results is broadcast on the fourth Tuesday of the month at 1 p.m. Eastern. My program is designed to inform listeners about major challenges in the U.S. and globally and ways all of us can make a difference. The best way that I've found for one person to make a difference is with the Results Organization. And we're going to be speaking to the founder of the Results Organization, Sam Daly Harris, in a few minutes. Results is a volunteer citizens lobby creating the political will to end hunger and poverty. And I believe everyone can get good results if they know how and where to connect to something that they're passionate about. Nelson Mandela said, "Overcoming poverty is not a gesture of charity. It's an act of justice. It is the protection of a fundamental human right to dignity and a decent life." And it's up to us. You know, we are the ones that we've been waiting for. There's no one else coming. It's our turn. So check out www.results.org for actions we can take to help those who need a hand up to pull themselves out of poverty. And as of today, for my show today, as we know, we are 2 weeks post-presidential election 2016. And we may need some direction about where we go from here. So we're also entering the holiday season, Thanksgiving week, where people are looking for messages of hope and peace for the world. And someone who's been my biggest inspiration for the past 11 years is my friend and teacher, Sam Daly Harris. And I'm honored to have him with me today to talk about actions we can take now and about his very important book, Reclaiming Our Democracy. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about Sam first. Well, there's so many good things about Sam that I can tell you. Sam Daly Harris is founder of Results, an international citizens lobby dedicated to creating the political will to end hunger and poverty. There are 115 Results groups in the U.S., and we are now reaching 13 countries and growing. In 2007, Nobel Peace Prize laureate Muhammad Yunus said, "No other organization has been as critical a partner in seeing to it that microcredit is used as a tool to eradicate poverty and empower women than Results and Results Educational Fund Microcredit Summit Campaign." Sam Daly Harris is also founder of the Microcredit Summit Campaign, a project of Results Educational Fund, and he organized the February 1997 Microcredit Summit in Washington, D.C., which was attended by 2,900 delegates from 137 countries. And they launched a campaign to reach 100 million of the world's poorest families, especially the women of those families, with credit for self-employment and other financial and business services by 2005. At that first summit, then U.S. First Lady Hillary Clinton said, "I am thrilled to see such a turnout for this summit, which is one of the most important gatherings we could have anywhere in our world. The goal of reaching 100 million of the world's poorest families was surpassed in 2007. Fabulous news." So anyway, Sam Daly Harris is also the author of Reclaiming Our Democracy, Healing the Break Between People and Government, about which Jimmy Carter said, "Daly Harris provides a roadmap for global involvement in planning a better future, and the 20th anniversary edition was released in 2013. So Sam Daly Harris has received lots of awards. I'm not going to go through them all, but, you know, things like creative altruism, caring, being an innovator, ethical, and the Susan M. Davis Lifetime Achievement Award from the Grameen Foundation in 2007. But not content with focusing his advocacy on global poverty, Daly Harris began coaching Citizens Climate Lobby, in July 2007, 3 months before it was launched, and has been coaching them ever since. In 2015, CCL had 3,647, let me get this right here, CCL had published media, 3,647 pieces of media and 1,245 lobby meetings, which has just gone skyrocketing through, you know, just crazy. They've just been doing such a great job. And a leading climate scientist, Jim Hansen, wrote, "If you want to join the fight to save the planet, to save creation for your grandchildren, there's no more effective step you could take than becoming an active member of Citizens Climate Lobby." Hansen could have mentioned Greenpeace, Sierra Club, any other, you know, established organization, but instead he named the five-year-old Citizens Climate Lobby, and it's just growing by leaps and bounds. It's amazing. My husband, Peter Albertson, is also a group leader, is the group leader of a CCL group in Southeast Michigan. So then, in 2010, Ashoka founder Bill Drayton wrote, "Sam Daly Harris is one of the certified great social entrepreneurs of the last decades. After building results, he is the person, more than anyone else, who's brought microcredit into the focus around the world and precipitated action." And Sam is great about, you know, giving us actions that we can do, and it's been just so powerful and empowering. So at the beginning of 2012, he left his position at the Microcredit Summit campaign to launch the Center for Citizens Empowerment and Transformation. CCET will work with leaders of organizations to more deeply engage their supporters in order to create champions in Congress and media for their causes. And last but not least, Sam Daly Harris has degrees in music, played percussion instruments in the Miami Philharmonic for 12 years, and is a songwriter. He's married and lives in Princeton, New Jersey with his wife, Shannon, who is an ordained Presbyterian minister and a consultant with the Religious Affairs Division of the Children's Defense Fund, which is a fabulous organization also. They have a son, Micah, and a daughter, Sophie. So we're really excited to hear what Sam has to say today. And let me check and see. Sam, can you hear me? They're coming.
Very well.
Oh, okay. I got it. The little microphone finally turned red on there. So I wasn't thinking, we weren't quite in. But, yes, I can hear you real well, too, Sam. And thank you so much for coming on the program. I'm honored always to listen to you because you have such great ideas and you've done so much to change the world. I hope, you know, sometimes I think you don't even realize how much you've done to change the world. I hope you do, because all of us at Results and everyone else I know just thinks you're the best. So thanks for being here.
Great.
So I'm thinking that being two weeks after the election, there's probably been a lot of people that have, you know, asked you questions about what we should do next. You know, I know the president-elect has its 100-day plan, and I know Results was talking about a 100-day plan. And I know there's been a quote that you've shared with people by Alex Stephan, and the response has always been, "Can you send me a copy? It's so good." So would you share it with us and tell us why you think it resonates with people so much at this time?
Sure. I love it, and I'm going to repeat it if it's okay with you. He said, "Optimism is a political act. Those who benefit from the status quo are perfectly happy with a large population of people who think nothing is going to get any better. In fact, these days, cynicism is obedience. What's really radical is being willing to look right at the magnitude and difficulty of the problems we face and still insisting that we can solve those problems." I used to share this quote before the election, and people said, "Send me a copy." And now, after the election, even more say so. He said, "Optimism is a political act. Those who benefit from the status quo are perfectly happy with a large population of people who think nothing is going to get any better. In fact, these days, cynicism is obedience." I love that. What's really radical is being willing to look at the magnitude and difficulty of the problems we face and still insist we can solve those problems. And it speaks to so many things, I think, that are going on for people. I think people, you know, can easily feel cynical any day, and especially these days. But we have to realize that cynicism is obedience. And, you know, it just, I think it really hits people. And that people who benefit from the status quo are perfectly happy with me going to sleep and thinking nothing will get any better. You know, and so what's really radical is looking at the big problems and picking one, insisting we can solve it, and then getting to work at it.
Yeah. I think that it's easier for someone like you or someone like me. I've been involved in results for 11 years, and I think, you know, we've gone through this election and that election and different people in Congress and everything, and somehow, you know, we work really hard to figure out what problems would be most important to tackle and which members of Congress would care the most about which actions. And so I think I feel like I'm not as, you know, lost or feeling that I can't do anything. I feel a little bit more that way since the election, but I feel like I've been so empowered by results and getting to know members of Congress. What do you think?
I'd like to share this story. I was doing a lecture at Rutgers University in New Jersey. And before the lecture, I met with students. They were sitting around tables, and I'd go table to table, and they'd introduce themselves, and they'd ask a question. I get to the last table, and the last student says, "I'm in an honors futures class with a view to 50 years in the future. What's the most important issue we could work on?" And I said, "Well, my friends in climate change tell me if we don't fix that, we're toast. And my friends in campaign finance reform tell me if we don't fix that, nothing will change. And my friends in global poverty tell me it's a blight on humanity. But for me, the most important issue is why so few of us see ourselves as change makers. If we could fix that, if we could fix that one, there'd be a barrage of people into all of these issues." And so at some level, when I look out, I see the cynicism and hopelessness as being the thing that needs to be fixed. And then we move on to our issue, whether it's global poverty or domestic poverty or campaign finance reform or climate change or whatever. And so it was just an interesting moment with that student a few years ago.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I think, you know, like one thing that that I mentioned before is many of those issues are so important, and you have to find what your passion is or what you're the most passionate about. Maybe not all of us can fix everything, but we can make a big difference in whatever issue we're passionate about and actually do actions for it. There have been so many petitions up the last couple weeks on Facebook, sign this, sign that, but I know that's not enough, and I know you probably agree.
If I could just add a second step, step one that you were mentioning, which is find an issue you're passionate about, and then step two is find an organization that feeds you, that empowers you, that and beyond the mouse click. So if I'm very passionate about X, but I'm left dangling, clicking on petitions all the time, it doesn't feed me. It doesn't help me get out of my comfort zone. And that's the second piece that we need to get good at.
Well, I think the other thing, too, if people don't know anything about organizations like Results or CCL, you think, good, I'm going to sign this petition. Okay, I signed it. Well, then it's just gone, and you have no idea whether something helped or if you made a difference or, you know, if people agree with you or if that person in Congress has even looked at it. I think, you know.
So my main point is don't stop. with the online activism. It's just don't stop there. Go deeper than that. And you got to find an organization that'll help you go deeper, because most don't.
You know, and I know from a while back, I remember you saying something about, you know, find an organization because they're there. You don't have to go start one yourself, because there's good ones out there. You just have to research and find something.
Yeah.
Okay. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey from musician to activist, too, and how? What was your motivation for such a total change in career and your focus? And it's an interesting story.
Yeah. Yeah, I love to tell this story because I think it parts of it is kind of everybody's story. But I have a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in music, and I played percussion instruments in the Miami Philharmonic Orchestra for 12 years and taught high school music. And then 36 years ago, I founded the Anti-Poverty Lobby Results, and I'm often asked, well, what was the motivation there from music to poverty lobby? What was that about? When I look back in my life, there are several experiences that kind of pointed to this change in direction. The first is I graduated from high school in 1964, and I played timpani in the orchestra at the graduation ceremony. And just before the ceremony, a flute player came back to the percussion section and told me that a high school fraternity brother of mine, a year younger, had died the day before in a tractor-trailer accident in Georgia. It was her next-door neighbor, so she knew about it before I did. And I always say, I was 17. When I was 17, I thought I had forever. I mean, mortality was an irrelevant concept. But during the mourning period and the funeral and after the funeral, I went with my friend's younger brother to pick up his report card from the homeroom teacher. It began to dawn on me that maybe I had 17 more minutes or months or years, and the questions of purpose came up. Why am I here? What am I here to do? 4 years later, 1968, college graduation, Robert Kennedy is assassinated right in those days. And it's another one of those, what is this life? What is this death? Why am I here? What am I here to do? No answers, but the questions are getting clearer. 9 years later, 1977, I'm invited to a presentation on ending world hunger. And I go to this thing thinking, well, hunger's inevitable. What do I know? I'm a musician. Because it's inevitable because I think there are no solutions. Because if there were solutions, somebody would have done something by now. So I go to this presentation. It's put on by the Hunger Project. And right away, I realize there's no mystery to growing food or clean water or basic health or sanitation. None of that stuff is mysterious. I'm not hopeless about the perceived lack of solutions. I'm hopeless about human nature. People will just never get around to doing the things that can be done. But there's one human nature I have some control over, my own, and my questions. Why am I here? What am I here to do? So I get involved in a big way. And this is the end of the story. In 1978 and 1979, I spoke to 7,000 high school students on ending world hunger. And just before going into the first classroom, I read some statements from the U.S. National Academy of Sciences Food and Nutrition Study calling for the political will to end hunger. So I asked these 7,000 high school students, what's the name of your member of Congress? I don't want to know if you wrote them. I don't want to know if you met them. Just the name. And out of 7,000 students asked, 200 could answer correctly. Fewer than 3% could answer correctly. More than 97% didn't know the name of their member of Congress. And results grew out of this gap between the calls for the political will to end hunger on the one hand and the lack of basic information on who represented us in Washington on the other. And if I could just take a moment and give you a little glimpse, and your listeners, of some of our successes. Let me just give you one. We started lobbying in results in 1984 on child survival issues when UNICEF was reporting that worldwide 41,000 children were dying every day from largely preventable malnutrition and disease, things like measles coupled with malnutrition, when a vaccine could protect a child from measles and from death. And we started lobbying in 84. In 1986, the volunteers generated 90 editorials on tripling the Child Survival Fund. And for the last 32 years, Results has lobbied year in, year out on child survival issues and funding. Funding has skyrocketed, and the child death rate has gone from 41,000 a day in 1984 to 16,000 a day today. And so, you know, if you've been involved in Results for some of those years or all of those, you were part of that. You are part of that dramatic reduction, and most people don't know. I mean, if you go out on the street and say, how's the world going, you'll get some kind of hell in a handbasket answer. Nobody knows that, you know, child deaths have plummeted and the number of children out of primary school has plummeted and, you know, that there are all kinds of improvements going on because the news mostly covers what's failing and not what's succeeding. But anyway, that's my story in terms of music to advocacy.
Well, we're sure glad that you decided to do that. And I know that you have worked. When I talked about what Nobel Peace Prize laureate Muhammad Yunus had to say about you and your work, would you have a little blurb to say about Muhammad Yunus?
Well, I mean, other than he's a genius, you know, and again, it's that same kind of thing where he saw a problem and he tried to figure out what to do and, frankly, trial and errored into creating Grameen Bank, and you know, which now reaches 8 million mostly very poor women who are now climbing out of poverty with their small loans, creating small businesses, and being able to pay for their kids going to school and better food and better housing and the like.
And I think because we in Results had helped lobby to get him the Congressional Gold Medal so he could speak to Congress, and then I don't know if it was after that one or if it was the Presidential Medal of Freedom. I think he's only one of seven in the world that has gotten those two and the Nobel Peace Prize. But a reporter said to him, well, you can't be serious. You can't be serious that you're getting what 90-some percent, 95% payback to your loans. We can't get that here. And he said to them, no, you can't get it here because you don't loan to the same people that we do. We loan to the poor, and the poor always give back. And that just really stuck with me for, you know, ever since, because I thought, people do not take things as seriously, here or unless they're, you know, really in deep poverty like that. So anyway, I just, you know, I've been going for about 11 years now, and I'm just thrilled to be a part of this. And our group just had a meeting with Congresswoman Brenda Lawrence from Michigan, and, you know, we get to see them all quite often. And so I guess, you know, it's something to me that it means so much to me, and it's such a joy to think that you've done something to help others. I know one of the people that I love, Michael Beckwith, always says, this life, it's not about you. It's about who you can love and what you can do for other people, and I really believe that.
Yeah.
So
if I could add this, because I had this experience recently. You talked about you met with a congresswoman very recently and you get in to see them regularly. And I was having a conversation with an advocacy leader, a volunteer in an organization, and he said, well, you know, my congressman's really good. There's no real reason to meet with them. And as a result, I did a webinar a couple of weeks ago with Citizens Climate Lobby on the champion scale. And I talked about at the beginning that I hear a lot, oh, my member of Congress is so good, there's really no reason to meet with them. Or my congressperson is so bad, there's really no reason to meet with them. And I go, say what? You know? And so I think it's really important for people to realize that if their member of Congress is opposed to whatever your issue is, it's your job to meet with them and educate them and love them to move from opposed to neutral, and eventually to move from neutral to being a supporter, and eventually move from being a supporter to being an advocate on this issue, and then moving from an advocate to being a leader and a spokesperson, and eventually becoming a champion on your issue, and not kind of throwing up your hands and saying, so bad, no, you know, there's nothing to do.
Right.
They're so good, there's nothing to do. No, with the champion scale, there's plenty to do.
Yeah, and we've talked about how, you know, like now with us working on the Reach Act, we have, you know, a lot of people in Michigan that have signed on, but then our job was to go see those members of Congress and ask them if they had a friend on the other side of the aisle or someone who hadn't signed on yet, and would they go and talk to them about it and tell them about why it would be good to also sign on it. So it's not just them, it's like us, you know, getting them to be a champion so that they would actually talk to others and they can make some, you know, big things happen also.
Yeah, so moving them to be an advocate, not just be a supporter. I co-sponsored the bill. I support the bill. No, I'm going to bring other people on the bill, or I'm going to get the chairman to do the work in committee on the bill. I'm going to advocate for this, not just support it.
Yeah, we're getting very close to where we need to be on the Reach Act in the House. We're up to something like, I think, 216. We need 218 members of the House of Representatives on this bill to move the bill. And the first three people that got on the bill, including my person who I got on the bill, were all Republicans and conservative. And this bill is trying to save all mothers and children who die of preventable disease by 2035. And you know, once they do something like that, then when you go see them, you can thank them for what they did and what a difference it's going to make in the world and stuff like that. So even ones that you feel are more conservative or maybe, you know, don't go along with everything, there usually is something that you can talk to them about. So,
absolutely.
Anyway, I know you usually have some really great quotes to talk about organizations that will support us and dissolve our powerlessness. And so have you got something you'd like to share?
Well, yeah, there's some quotes that I love that I say point to our predicament and really the work I do now coaching organizations to help us out of the predicament. Well, this first one is from Frances Moore LePay, who wrote Diet for a Small Planet more than 40 years ago. And in a more recent book, Getting a Grip 2, she said, "A real problem is not a heating planet or rampant malnutrition. We only have one real problem, our own feelings of powerlessness to manifest the solutions right in front of our noses." She said, "A real problem is not a heating planet or rampant malnutrition. We only have one real problem, our own feelings of powerlessness to manifest the solutions right in front of our noses." And, you know, the groups that I work with have these structures of support that can dissolve the powerlessness. They have groups rather than working alone, and then they get the groups together and link them on a conference call or webinar every month so they will, you know, it can be empowered and inspired and trained. And and so this next quote is from Lawrence Lessig, the Harvard professor, works on campaign finance issues. He said last year, we did a poll and found that 96% of Americans want money out of politics, but 91% said it can't be done. That's the politics of resignation. But the politics of resignation gives you a way forward. If we can find a way to thaw that resignation, we can find a way to winning. And so that's my gig. I work with groups to set up structures of support that can help thaw the resignation, so that when a group like Citizens Climate Lobby, their volunteers have 3,000 letters to the editor published last year, that's thawing the resignation. When a group like Results, and mostly, you know, and there are some other groups working on it too, but the real central players in Results get almost half the House to co-sponsor the Reach Every Mother and Child Act, and almost half of them are Republicans. That's thawing the resignation. I'm working with the group, the Quaker Lobby Friends Committee on National Legislation, FCNL. Oh. And, you know, they had their annual meeting in D.C. A week ago. I don't know the results of that, but before they got to D.C., they had 105 meetings with members of Congress back home since January on mass incarceration, ending mass incarceration, and sentencing reform. And they have 34 groups, and 24 of them started since February. So 24 of their 34 groups just started this year, and they already had 105 meetings back home with Congress or their staff. And so that's thawing the resignation. And if I can, there's one more quote. It's from a New York Times column, and then my response to it. Frank Rich from the New York Times said 9 years ago, but it could have been 9 seconds ago, he said a recent poll found that 24% of Americans believe the country is on the right track. That might mean that 76% believe the country is on the wrong track. Wrong track is a euphemism. We are a people in clinical depression who know our ideals have been vandalized. And my response to that quote is this, and maybe, you know, I might just leave you with this. Most nonprofit organizations ignore the toxicity or are oblivious to the toxicity into which they send their volunteer advocates. And as a consequence, they don't create a powerful enough structure of support that can be the antidote to that toxicity. Instead, they offer mouse click activism, thin gruel for anyone hungry to make a difference. And so I would really urge your listeners who might be interested in global or domestic poverty to go to results.org, a group that does not ignore the toxicity and does work to create a structure of support that can be the antidote to that toxicity. And that would be www.results.org. And any of your listeners who are interested in climate change, they could go to www.citizensclimatelobby.org. And for any listeners who are interested in mass incarceration, fcnl.org, working on sentencing reform legislation right now. And for any of your – and these are all groups I work with to create these powerful structures of support – anyone interested in a 28th Amendment to overturn Citizens United and get money out of politics should go to American Promise, which is AmericanPromise.net, N-E-T. They're just starting to build their structure of support. And if you go to any of those, results.org, citizensclimatelobby.org, fcnl.org, or AmericanPromise.net, you can reach a group that's committed to thawing the resignation, dissolving the powerlessness, being an antidote to all the toxicity.
That's great, Sam. I just want to ask you one thing because I was going to give those out too, but the Quaker one, did you say that was FCNL?
Yes, the Friends Committee on National Legislation, FCNL.org.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I'm going to do that one too because I had a radio show on mass incarceration, and I think that's a huge problem. So I was glad to hear that. And I'm going to let the listeners know after I let you go about the next call that Results is having for new people that want to get active with Results, and I'll let them know what time and what the phone number is for that. And anyone that wants to call me and ask me any questions about any of those organizations, I will connect you to someone that can help you with whatever you want to do. And we just thank you, Sam. We thank God for you.
Yes, and blessings to you. You're doing such a great job.
Oh, well, thank you. I was looking at my book for your 20th anniversary of your book, and just part of what you signed was Your Partner in Healing the World. And that almost makes me cry. So I just really appreciate you and everything that you do for all of us. And you have wonderful Thanksgiving and wonderful holidays. And I'm going to stay on just for a minute to give out the number for a Results intro call.
Okay,
so thanks,
blessings
Sam.
To you and all your listeners.
Okay, thanks so much. I'm going to put it out everywhere I can on Facebook. So we'll see how it goes. Thanks again.
Great.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay. Well, Sam gave all the websites, so I think we're all set. The only thing I was going to give you was that I checked and found out when the next new people that want to get involved with Results and get active. They have calls all the time, but the next one is Monday, December 12th at 9 p.m. This is for Results for Hunger and Poverty, and the phone number is 712-432-3100, and the passcode for that call is 761262. And for Hunger and Poverty, you can decide if you want to work more on actions for the U.S. or globally or both. And I'm in a group that's Results Global and domestic in Detroit area. So, and if you need to get a hold of me, it's M Albertson, ALBERTSON 05 at AOL.com. So everyone, thank you for listening. Please share this information with everyone that you know that might want to get involved, because once they do get involved, they will love it and feel like it is a joy. It's, you know, probably the biggest joy that I have is trying to work on helping others that need food and are in poverty. The U.S. now has 20% of its children in poverty. We are second only to Romania out of 35 developed nations, and that shouldn't be happening. We have enough to feed everyone. So thank you for listening. This will also be in the archives if someone else wants to listen to it. And have a happy Thanksgiving and happy holidays, and I'll be back next month. Thank you so much. God bless. Bye.